All right. If you were here a couple weeks ago, Pastor Tom, our senior pastor, if you weren't, I'll tell you about it. He had went to a retreat, and at the retreat, he was like, it was all about rest. It was all about sleeping and just getting your rest in there. But he said also, he was convicted because someone there had talked about, if you're in a hurry, then you're not in love. You're not dealing with love because love is patient. And so he felt like being in a hurry, you really weren't doing that well, the love part. And another part of that was that he was saying that if your schedule, if your calendar has you going to this thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, that's just not right. There has to be where he felt that he felt the Lord was speaking to him, stop, to just stop. And he was saying how in that as well, it was that conviction that in his prayer time, in his quiet time with the Lord, that he also felt that he was praying for his next message or he was praying for his next big meeting instead of really just spending that time with God. And I tell you all of that because back in March, I too was in that same place because back in March, I spoke about how I was working for God more than I was working with God. And so with the schedule, being a pastor, and many people of you in your lives got schedules and this, you know, for me, it's almost like a bowling pin. It's like I do this, get that done, go on to the next thing, you know, then this pop up, get that down, then that pops up, and that's how I get through it, you know. But what God was showing me was, as I just said, you're working for me, but you're not working with me. And so I was talking to someone about God. And then as I was walking off, I felt like the voice of the Lord spoke to me and said, you are talking more about me than you are talking to me. And then that made me stop. Like, okay. So I was sharing this testimony in a class with a group of people, and someone in the midst of it stopped me and asked me, and said, well, did you repent? And I was like, of course. But it wasn't about repenting. It was God giving me a warning. And so what I needed was a correction. And so I had to make a correction. And what does a correction look like in this process, Pastor Andrew? I'm so glad all of you asked me. I will tell you. The correction is that last time when I spoke about silencing my mind, putting my mind in a place where I could just focus on Christ, that I could just be in a place with Jesus Christ, with God, that I could just be in this place. I don't even want to say nothing to him. I just want my mind on him. It was where I was at and where I was trying to do. So with that being said, class, we're going to do an experiment. And I'm going to invite you just for 1 minute to just sit here and just put your mind on Christ. If any thought comes up, push it away. Just push it away. Push it away. Reset. If a thought comes in, you got to reset. If you are here today and you're at this church and you're like, I don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, or you're watching online and you're like, I don't have a relationship with Christ, with God, take this moment, this space that we're going to get into, and invite him into this space. Invite him in the realness of who he is in this moment, that you might have that relationship. So I'm going to set this clock for 1 minute, and then we're just going to be silent and put our minds strictly on Jesus. Go. Okay. Now, did that feel awkward? Awkward silence? Did that feel long? This isn't to convict. This isn't to condemn. It's just showing where we are in our minds. That felt long. 1 minute with God was a long time. Okay. But again, I wanted you to participate in this exercise to see and to understand what it is to shut down, to sign off. You know, it's like when you really want to go be with God, I got to close the laptop. I got to turn my tablet off. I got to pull my earbuds out. I got to put my phone on buzz, and then I got to take my watch off. That's how it is for us to unplug, to just spend that time with God. In early August, Pastor Tom had assigned us our chapters to preach, and I was assigned chapter 7, The Battle to Begin, and I already had this message that I'm speaking. I'm not here to preach to you today. I'm here to share with you what God showed me, because I'm the person who got corrected. And then as I was going through this, God brought all of these things up and showed these to me. So what I want to do with you today instead of preach, I just want to take these scriptures and I want to show you these things that God revealed to me in here. And like I said, with the story, this called The Battle Begins. But I call this fighting to focus. Fighting to focus on God and the things of God. Which leads to my message today. It all became clear as I was reading in the one-year Bible. When I was putting the message together back in August or September, I was reading from the month of June. And that's how far behind I was when I started this. And now, you don't need to know where I'm at now. I'm still reading is all you need to know. And during that time of reading, I was seeing the Old Testament in a way I'd never seen it before. I feel I was seeing the big picture rather than focusing on the main characters. The big picture, chapter 7 of the story, is fight to begin, as I said, where Moses is passing the torch to Joshua to lead the Israelite people. Where we are now, if you're new here, we're reading from what's the story Bible. And it's a Bible with 31 chapters of Bible stories condensed down with the main points of it. And so we're going through that. And right now we're in Old Testament. But it just gives you a good upper picture of what's really going on in the Bible and what God is really doing. Because the story is about God's love for humanity. All of the scripture that's pulled out of there, that's what it's showing. Is God's love for humanity. And so we're going to start with Joshua 1. But before I read it, I'm going to start with it. Can we get Joshua 1? After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river of the Euphrates all the way to the Hittite country and to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. So, this is where the Israelite people are getting ready to cross over the Jordan and go into the promised land, the land of milk and honey. They're making their move. God has said it. Moses has died, and they're on their way over to that particular area with him. And so, Joshua is getting the people all together and doing all of this. And all of that, so that they're going there. So now they're getting there, and they're headed over there. Now, when they get there to this land of milk and honey, where they're all at, they get there, they got to do some battles. And one of their battles is that they got to tear down the wall of Jericho. They got to go into the city of Jericho and tear down the wall. And now, here's the specifics of this. They're over here in this new land. They're there. God gives them the first thing we're going to do. Tear down the wall of Jericho. Okay, but here's how you're going to do it. I want priests here to do this. I want the people with the cymbals and all of this to go before you and sing. And you're going to do this on the first day. And nobody say nothing. So the first day, everybody lines up. Everybody's got their royal robes on, their priestly robes. They got their instruments. They're in gear. So they're going to march around this wall. So they do it because God is specific about this. He is very specific about walking around this wall. And so Joshua is telling the people. So as they do this and they go around and all of that, get to the seventh day. Now God's like, the wall's going to fall down. Do not take any plunder from the place. Let it all be. Kill the women and the children. Get rid of all of them. You with me so far? All right. But now I'm going to show you something else here, though. Deuteronomy 9. After the Lord God has driven them out before you, do not say to yourselves, the Lord has brought me here to take possession of this land because of my righteousness. No, it is on account of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is going to drive them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or your integrity that you are going in to take possession of their land, but account of the wickedness these nations. The Lord your God will drive them out before you to accomplish what he swore to your father, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand then that it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord God is giving you this good land to possess, for you are a stiff-necked people. Okay. Yeah, the Old Testament get funny at times. Leviticus 18, the Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelite and say to them, I am the Lord your God. You must not do as you do in Egypt, where you used to live. And you must not do as they do in the land of Canaan, where I'm bringing you. Do not follow their practices. You must obey my laws and be careful to follow my decrees. I am the Lord your God. Keep my decrees and laws, for the person who obeys them will live by them. I am the Lord. No one is to approach any close relative to have sexual relationship. I am the Lord. Verse 22, I skipped down to verse 22. Do not have sexual relationships with a man as one does with a woman. That is despicable. Do not have sexual relationship with an animal and defile yourself with it. A woman must not present herself to an animal to have sexual relationship. That is, verse 24, do not defile yourself in any of these ways, because this is how the nations that I am going to drive out before you became defiled. Even the land was defiled, so I punished it for its sin, and the land vomited its inhabitants. I share this with you because getting an understanding that God is moving the Israelite people into this very new area. And God has called the Israelite people and said, I'm making you a people. But the people who live there, these are wicked, wicked people. And I share this with you because a lot of times you may talk to people and they'll tell you, in the Old Testament, God said, kill the women and the children. How cruel is he? They were already killing their women and children. They were already feeding their kids to Baal, the gods they made with their hands and sticks. So it's an understanding that God is holy and righteous, and he's not having these people around these people. And then he's bringing them in because God is saying, I'm getting rid of them. I'm getting rid of them. I call the Israelite people to myself. Let's understand something. People can get real, real, and real raw, and every man for himself. Now, I'm a sci-fi guy. So I like sci-fis, maybe one or two zombie movies, but you know, all of that stuff where the world goes to an end and you're like three or four people are alive. And at that point, it's just everybody for themselves in the movie. You're just following the smart guy, the guy who know how to charge up batteries and, you know, all that stuff, you know, and do these things where he can keep some water running or something like that, or her, the lady too, you know. And the real ones, the ones that can use the swords real good. But the fact of it is just seeing how real and how raw people actually can be. When you go into chaos, I mean, you know, I don't want to put y'all back in shock, but COVID, I'll just say a whisper, COVID, because I don't want nobody going in shock. But even that, you saw how raw people got. All the toilet tissue just went away. Just went away. You know? It was just, you were just left, you know? And so that's how real people can get when stuff show up and the rawness get to call us all out. You know, it's every man. So I'm just saying, God wasn't cruel. Just understand, he's a holy and righteous God. And he's saying these people's sins before him was crying out to him in that way. Now, getting back to Joshua at Jericho, they're at Jericho. They done tore the wall down. They got all this stuff, and God was very specific about it. He was very specific. Don't take none. Lead a plunder. But you got one in every bunch. You got one in every bunch. You do. And he's got the right name, too. And it said, Joshua said to Achan, because I just look at that and say, that boy was just aching to steal. He was just aching to take some. He's just aching. Get the right name. Joshua, the son of Achan, said to Achan, my son, give the glory to the Lord, the God of Israel, and honor him. Tell me what you have done. Do not hide it from me. Achan replied, it is true. I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel. This is what I have done. When I saw in the plunder the beautiful robe from Babylon and 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and took them. They are hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath. So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran to the tent, and there it was, hidden in his tent with the silver underneath. They took the things from the tent and brought them to Joshua and all the Israelites and spread them out before the Lord. Now, Achan said, I saw all the bling bling, man. I just couldn't help myself. It was just too much bling bling. The robe and all of this stuff was laying around. And so from that point, he just took the stuff. But my whole message is fighting the focus. It's like, focus, Achan. The Lord done told you don't take nothing. But because he saw the stuff, and it was shiny, and it was bling bling, he couldn't help himself. He defied the Lord. How about us? When we see the bling bling, when we see that shiny thing, when we got that thing I need to have, I didn't ask the Lord for it. I didn't pray about it. I just saw it. You know, I'm gonna buy this. Okay, well, whatever. It's focusing. What do I focus on? And the bling bling will take you away from it every time. And it reminds me when Jesus was led into the wilderness and he took Jesus up there. What did the devil do? He showed Jesus all this stuff. Hey, I'm going to show you this. I'll show you these cities. I'll show you this. I'll show you this. He's trying to get Jesus to lose focus. He's trying to get him to lose focus. And so that's what it was. You know, poor Achan, he just lost focus on that. Not to mention, you know, I was thinking about this. Because like I said, I've been reading the Old Testament, and it just, I don't know, it's funny to me. It's serious, but it's just some of the things they say and all of that. Like Jeroboam, I don't know if they're making any more Jeroboams today. But it's just, Achan is just taking this stuff, you know. I thought, like, Achan going to be in heaven. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're going to hear the jackhammer going. And you go around the corner, and there Achan is with the jackhammer, because the streets are made of gold. He's just trying to get him some of it. You know, he's just trying to get him some, you know. It's just like, Achan, bro, come on. You know, just walk on it. Don't take it. And so in 2 Kings 12, losing focus for yourself, thinking of self. So Rehoboam was king, but then he wouldn't listen to the people. And so Jeroboam and the Israelite people came to him and said, hey, you got too heavy of a yoke on us. Can you make it light? And then he talked to his young guys, and they were all like, no, make it harder. So the people got mad, and then they left. And they said, no, we're going home. We ain't dealing with you. So then they all left. So Rehoboam just became king over Judah. But then Jeroboam, the people came to him, and they said to him, so let's see here, Jeroboam, they were going to make him king. And they did. So the Israelite people made him king and all of that. Now, so Rehoboam's over there, Jeroboam's down here. The Israelite people following him. Rehoboam's just got his little peoples up in Judah. Now, all of a sudden, though, Jeroboam thought to himself, the kingdom will now likely revert to the house of David. That's where Rehoboam was at. If these people go up to offer sacrifice at the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, they will again give their alliance to their Lord, Rehoboam. king of Judah. They will kill me and return to the king Rehoboam. After seeking advice, the king made two golden calves. He said to the people, "It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. One he set up in Bethel and the other in Dan. And this thing became a sin. The people came to worship the one in Bethel and went as far as Dan to worship the other. Jeroboam built shrines on high places and appointed priests from all sorts of people, even though they were not Levites. He instituted festivals on the 15th day of the eighth month, like the festival held in Judah, and offered sacrifice on the altar. This he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves he made at Bethel, and he also installed priests at the high places he had made. On the 15th day of the eighth month, a month of his own choosing, he offered sacrifices on the altar he had built at Bethel. So he instituted festivals for the Israelites and went up to the altar to make offerings." Now, this is where sometimes where I say you giggle or you can't believe it when you read Old Testament. Jeroboam is building calves. He's making altars to God that he ain't supposed to be making. And he's making them because he's scared. He's thinking of himself. He's thinking of himself that if the people go up, then they're not going to make me king. They're going to come kill me. So then he turns because he's thinking of himself. He goes and make all of these idols and all of these things, all of these places. Jeroboam, do you know like 15 of your family members before you did the same thing? Made idols and made all this stuff? And now you are remaking the very idols that God already said don't make? I mean, is it just me or the Israelite people? What are y'all thinking? What are you thinking? And I know he's lost his focus. He lost his focus because he's thinking of himself. And again, how does that relate to us when we start to think of ourselves? When we start to think, I need to manipulate a situation, or I need to change things, or I need to do this so people will like me and do all of this. And so then we set up whatever idols we set up against God, because all of a sudden we're dealing with the fear of man, or we're dealing with the fact I'd rather be liked by these people more than God right now. That thinking of self can get in the way of focusing on God and what God has for you and where he's leading us and where we're at. And so it's like I said, Jeroboam did all these things and broke all these laws, which he paid for later. And there was one part in there, Jeroboam, you read in there, and it's like Jeroboam, he did worse than all his fathers before him. And it's like, wow, he really messed up in that, losing focus on accomplishments. So we'll go to the story. Pastor Tom has talked about it, I think, a couple of times. It's David, where King David was going to go get the ark. He was going to go get the ark, and Pastor Tom talked about that, the sacrificing on every step. So here's where it's at. How to carry the ark is in Exodus 25, 13 through 15. Then make poles of a cedar wood and overlay them with gold. 14, insert the poles into the rings on the side of the ark to carry it. The poles are to remain in the rings of this ark. They are not to be removed. Okay. But David went and got the ark, grabbed his men, because David was at a place in Israel where they were at peace. And then all the tribes were kind of together. He had gotten everybody together. So David was at peace and everything was happening. And David just forgot who put him in peace, who brought him to that place. See, now things were being accomplished. Again, he lost focus. He lost focus on God. So now I'm finna go get the presence of God and I'm gonna bring it up here. You see, when we're achieving things, when we got things happening, we're buying a house, you're graduating from college, you get a car, whatever it is, have the presence of God in there and carry it right by giving him thanks and acknowledging that what you got is because you're blessed of God and that he helped you make this happen. But see, David, he got so misfocused that then he just went on off. He got this ark. He brought it up. And I think he's blessed that only one man got killed. Because you were doing this so wrong that, yeah, he had sense enough to park the ark. Because we messing up here. And only one person got killed. But then you read, David learns how to carry the ark. 1 Chronicles 15:13-26. It was because you, the Levites, did not bring it up the first time that the Lord our God broke out in anger against us. We did not inquire of him about how to do it in the prescribed way. Isn't that just something? All of a sudden, David's the king. It's whatever David say. But now he's saying, we didn't do it right. We didn't see the Lord. You know, it's kind of one of those, king. Well, you can't say that because you get your head cut off. But you can think it like, king, what you mean we, you know? But it's like, it's funny how leadership at a time, when they go like that, you know, to mess up. Now it's we, okay? So David and the elders of Israel and the commanders of the unit of thousands went to bring the ark up, the covenant of the Lord from the house of Obed-Edom with rejoicing because God had helped the Levites who were carrying the ark of the covenant of the Lord. And then they killed the seven bulls and sacrificed. But you see, when you're doing it right, when you're walking right with God, then it says he helped them. When you carry his presence right, when you acknowledge what you got, it's God is helping you get it. God has gave it to you. That's when he will help you. You know, I'm often saying to everyone when we give thanks on Tuesday morning, I pray and they're like, well, why would he be thankful for God? I am just thankful for the food in my refrigerator. I am thankful that when I hit a light switch, it comes on. I'm thankful I get out of a warm bed and I got a roof over my head because I've lived where those things were never there. And I lived in a Southern black family where you always gave thanks for all those things because they was just as important because they don't have to happen. And because I know some families where they don't happen. And so now I take nothing for granted, you know, nothing for granted. I take it all there and put it all in there because that's how it is. And I don't know why, but it's like being thankful for those things. Is one time when I told my son, because he's like 19, 20 something, he didn't want to work. And I was like, look, son, in this house, you got to work. I said, look at mom go to work. I go to work. I said, look at the light bulb. It worked. The refrigerator worked. The stove worked. It's like everybody in here work. I said, if the TV don't work, what we do with it? It's got to go. It's got to go. If something in here, I said, the light bulb don't come on, it don't work. What? It's got to go. And I told him, it's like, son, you know what? I tell you what, I love you. Now, I'll take you down to Sears, and Sears got them big old refrigerator boxes. And then we can staple some of them together, and then you can have you a nice little place if you don't want to work. Because I told him, there's a name for folks that, you know, it's called homeless. There you go. And I'm sorry, I'm just old school. That's how I was raised. I was put in a box if I didn't work. So, but again, it's just these things of so David and the elders of Israel commander came together. And David lost his focus. Losing focus with the people in our lives. So one of the staff members was here and we were in the hallway, we were talking one day. So I was just asking him about life and stuff and he started sharing with me. He was gonna be gone for about 3 weeks or so. Him and his wife were having a baby with the big project that they had here on campus and it was a major project through the summer and whatnot, how he was just focused on this big project. And as he's talking, he doesn't know my message, but I'm just sitting here like, whoa, okay, proving me right. And he starts talking about how his wife was telling him, you know, she's missing him. She's not seeing him, and he's not there. And he was like, and I was just so focused on the big project, getting that done. And I'm explaining to her, I got to this, and I got to that, and do this, and do that. And then she's like, yeah, but I need you here. But then all of a sudden, God, you know, his eyes got open. And that's why he was sharing with me. Because he's like, no, we're going away. He goes, I'm going away, and I'm finna focus on her. He goes, because this is where I've been. I've been doing this and I've been focusing over there. And so now I need to focus here with her and on her and do these things. And so when he was saying, I was like, yeah. And I explained to him, that's the very message I'm going to preach, is what I'm preaching about, is that we need to be focusing on the people that we love. Do we still focus on them? You know, we focus on them when they're a girlfriend or boyfriend or when we're engaged. So we just focus so much. But then 6 years later, then it's like they call you, what you on? Because now all of a sudden they got, oh, but we need to keep focusing on the people in our lives. We need to keep focusing on the relationships in our lives. Because God is all about relationships and people and being together. Amen? Amen. All right. Stay with me here. And I say it's funny how we lose our focus on the people who are close in our lives, because yet we spend time being distracted by the people around us. I can't focus on this person who is deeply in my life because I'm really distracted by these people over here and what these people here are doing. So Joshua and them, now they're there, they're in the land, they've done all of what they're doing. God has gotten rid of some of the different people who were there, but some he didn't get rid of. So they have to learn to live with some of these people and be there and be in the land with them. So Judges 2, number 8, Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, he died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance, in Timnath-Herah, in the hills country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. After the whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what had done for Israel, what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served Baal. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the people around them. They aroused the Lord's anger because they forsook him and served Baal and Ashtoreth. And in his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of the raiders who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Again, we're watching these people in this land that God has given them, that he's moved them there to be a people unto him and to be there. But yet now a generation dies off. And now this generation don't know God. And that's kind of funny to me. What kind of generation is that, that you don't know God all of a sudden? You didn't move. You're still there, but you know, you don't even remember your grandmama's grandmama. So I don't know, but that happens. You know, I was talking with Pastor Nathan and Pastor Jason, and as we were talking and sharing, it was Pastor Nathan was saying and Pastor Jason how they went to kindergarten here, right up in those upper balconies. Back then, they were in kindergarten at this place. And then they grew up here. And then I guess their parents might have been part of the MGT. I don't know. But that was just the heritage that they were here growing up. And then he moved away to Arizona. Jason moved away. But now they're back. And they both went over to ALCS. And I'm quite sure some of the teachers who was teaching back then or now are probably sitting in this very congregation. But he was just sharing that about his life. And that's what I think God had intended, that like he grew up here, he was there, and he did all of this. He went, he worshiped God, but now he's back with his children going to ALCS. That's the generation of God. That's what God's trying to create when he's creating these generations. And I started looking up some stuff here. I gotta go. Wow. I started looking up some stuff here, and it was 1925, 1945, the silent generation. Children were to be seen, not heard. Yeah, I do too. I kind of remember my grandmama telling me that, shut up, boy. And it was like, you know, you be seen, not heard. And it's like that. So 1965, 1979, Generation X, the baby bus. 1975, 1985, Generation, can't pronounce that word. Millennial Generation, Gen X, and all of this, and the Gen. So where we got to, where we are now, 2010 to 2025, Gen Alpha. We're in the Alpha Gen. It's the first to grow up entirely in the 21st century who have consequently grown up in full digital world dominated by technology, being digital natives and viewing the world through the smart screen. There was one of the things in here, I didn't talk about that, but when David then found out that, or Joshua then found out they had gotten beaten, they went over to go fight the AI. And when I was reading that in there, I was like, ooh, fighting the AI. Okay, anybody else know about the AI? So now I see Gen Alpha fighting the AI. But again, you know, there's people out there. And like people say about Madison and in America, you know, people get all uptight about people here. But, you know, like the Israelite people had the Hittites, the Amorites, the Moabites. You know, we live in Madison and we got the lost lights, the dark lights, and the don't do rights. We do. We live among them. But it's not about them. It's about us. God called them to be a people, the Israelite people, to be a people unto him, that they would be his people, so that then they could make a difference for the people out there, to bring the sojourners in and the different people to them, is what he was trying to do. But we get distracted because we're focusing. And that's why I say you get distracted because you got to be at work and I'm dealing with a don't do right or uptight. Yes, but you just be the Lord's vessel. You be unto God. Because here's how it goes. The parable of the weeds. Matthew 13, 24. Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weed among the wheat and went away. And when the wheat sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servant came and said to him, sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did the weeds come from? An enemy did this, he replied. The servant asked him, do you want us to go and pull them up? No, he answered, because while you are pulling the weeds, you may uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvester, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles and burn. Then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn. For Jesus, it's to be to let us all grow together. Those who are his people and those who are not, those who are seeking Christ and those who we work with who don't know Christ and all of that, we live together. But it's not worshiping their gods and living according to their lives. But Jesus knows that we're all together. And the reason why is because in Psalms 139, you have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to obtain. For you created my innermost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. Jesus is saying in that scripture in the Psalms is that I see you. He's saying, I see you. I saw you. Jesus is focused on you. He is focused on you in every way, in every manner. You are important to him. It's a wonderful feeling when you feel you've been seen, when you feel that somebody gets you, when somebody sees you, they know you. It's a good feeling. And Jesus wants to give everyone in this place that feeling. I see you. He knows you. It may be where it's like, if he knew me, if he saw me, then why did that thing happen when I was young? Why did this happen? Where was he then? He was there. He was there. And he cares. He still cares. And I know that all of us have that one question when we get to heaven that we all want to ask God. And I just know, and I'm already expecting it for my question, he's going to say something, and it's going to be, oh, okay, I get it. It's just going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So it's just a matter, if you leave here today, how do we focus? How do we focus in our prayer time? When does 1 minute of my mind on God isn't a long time? It's not long enough.